Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All Things Therapy with Lisa Tahir, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to All Things Therapy. I'm your host, Lisa Tahir. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and I practice as an intuitive psychotherapist. I'm certified both as a Reiki practitioner and an EMDR. You can find me online at NOLATherapy.com. It is the abbreviation for New Orleans, Los Angeles Therapy, and I have physical offices in both of those cities. You can also do Skype and phone sessions with me wherever you live worldwide. And you can find past episodes of this show and subscribe on YouTube, iTunes, and on Google Play. I'm going to introduce my guest. This is her second time on the show. In just a few moments, I'll be bringing on Tisha Morris. She is a feng shui master and founder of the Earth Home School of Feng Shui, where you can take courses both online. She has classes beginning in January and in person, with a class beginning in March of 2017. Professionally, she is an interior designer and an intuitive energy healer, and she creates supportive environments by utilizing space as a conduit for healing, which I'll have her talk more about. It underlies her principles of feng shui. She's also developed a product line of essential oil smudge sprays. She's authored 4 books, with one coming out, a fifth one coming out in 2017, and she contributes regularly to various publications, including the Live Box magazine. She has a podcast, she's a blogger, a yoga instructor, and formerly a practicing attorney. One of the ways she gives back that I hope we get to talk about today is that she's also founder of Feng Shui for the Planet. So I would love to have you come on, Tisha. Hello.
Hi, Lisa. So great to be back.
It's so great to have you back. How are you today?
I'm great, thanks.
Awesome. So we have a lot of topics potentially to explore. I'm wondering where you'd like to start with our listeners. We are talking about feng shui for the holidays. So I don't know if you'd like to begin with some basic feng shui principles, or I'll just kind of turn it over.
All right. Well, let's go with feng shui for the holidays, since that's coming up very quickly. And,
yeah.
You know, most people might wonder, what does feng shui have to do with the holidays? And our spaces tend to get really cluttered, just like our calendars, this time of year. And there's always a direct correlation between our space and our lives. And as our spaces become filled with decorations, or, you know, extra, you know, buying things and such, there is a direct correlation to the busyness that we take on this time of year as well. And so we already have potentially cluttered lives and cluttered homes, and it just gets compounded this time of year. And so I'd love to, you know, talk about some ways to kind of reduce that, so that we can actually use this time of year for its really intended purpose, which is the holidays, which is actually originally considered the holy days, which is actually a time for more inward contemplation and going in a more quiet yin phase of the year, as opposed to the yang phase in which our commercialized world would like us to be.
You know, I like when you, I'm going to piggyback off that, when you speak in your work about the yin and yang energies, and winter is about the yin energy of slowing down, being more internal, passive, kind of still and quiet. And that's in such juxtaposition to the holiday season, which is all about loud noise and shopping and traffic and visitors, some of whom, you know, we don't necessarily want to see. And so, you know, you talk in your work about how to bring some balance. And I love where you wrote about, you know, holidays, H-O-L-I, days, the holy days, and how in a lot of spiritual and religious traditions, this is a time where cultures and people do go more inward. But our American culture is so consumeristically driven, you know, that we're focusing on things that cause a lot of stress financially, emotionally, spiritually. And so how can we kind of tune in to that yin energy that is present right now and quiet ourselves and become more centered?
Yes, and I want to just add to that too, of just one more thing of how important that this is, and to not skip over this, what's called the water phase. So in the same feng shui, it's based on Taoism, which is where we get the five elements. And this is the cycle. The five elements is basically the cycle of birth, death, and rebirth. And It's made up of yin and yang, but also can be broken down further into the five elements. And you can, the best and easiest way to think of what the five elements are the seasons. So wood would be the spring season, fire would be summer, the equinoxes or late fall would be the earth element, and then the actual fall time as it starts getting colder and the leaves falling off the trees is the metal phase. And then winter is the water phase. And that is the phase of death. And obviously it doesn't have to be physical death, but of course, you know, it does correlate with a lot of passing during that time. But it really is a time of releasing. It's actually the water phase is the phase in which really we're closest to God. You're closest to God. It's a time for meditation. But what's so important, and what happens if we skip over that, we don't have the proper letting go and the proper reflection to really do what we need to do to stay within these cycles come springtime and really, you know, spring forward, taking that step into manifesting what we want. And so if we skip over the important part of planting the seeds in the winter, we're really doing ourselves a disservice when it comes to the spring season. So just want to add that as just a little bit more motivation to kind of tap into one's inner water element.
Definitely.
Go ahead.
Go on. I was going to say, and the veil is thinnest between heaven and earth now as well in this winter water phase. So it's an opportune time to, I think, meditate and to go inwardly with how we'd like our holidays to go and maybe try to construct them in that way, you know, that's true to our own belief systems and values.
Exactly. And like you said, there's a juxtaposition in our society of doing just the opposite. You know, we're traveling, we're seeing family, we're, you know, all these, you know, buying things, all these very, very yang activities instead. And so being more conscious of finding that balance, you know, obviously, I mean, the winter solstice, which actually is the epitome of the water phase, is it's the shortest day of the year. It's when it's the most, the yin is the most dominant day of the year. And of course, that's what our holy days are, you know, based around, is actually the winter solstice. Mm-hmm. So it is interesting that is has become the busyness. I think it's actually a reflection of our culture of, you know, finding ways of distracting ourselves from going inward. Cause can be a scary place to go, you know, inward. This is why we're constantly distracting ourselves. Most of us on various days. And so what better way than go shopping?
You know, and I think too, hearing you say this, that people typically feel a lot of anxiety come up around the holidays, because typically one is either with family that they might not see throughout the year, and they might not have necessarily good relationships with, or it highlights them being estranged from family and friends, mm-hmm. and they may feel a lot of loneliness. So I think it's just such a peak time and emotional experiences and hard to soothe oneself. So, you know, how can we address that in our homes, in our living spaces, feng shui?
Yeah, because the holidays, it's a real microscope on whatever emotions are present for you now and whatever emotions are from the past from that time of the year.
Yeah.
So if we look at our home as a metaphor for our lives, which, because it is, it's actually a very literal metaphor, mm-hmm. we can kind of see the state of how busyness, how much busyness we're taking on or not. And so it's interesting how, in the same way that we add all these extra activities into our life, we do that in our home as well through decorating. And mm-hmm. by no means am I trying to knock decorating, because it can be a really, you know, fun and an add to a home's feel and vibe. But, you know, if someone's, you know, usually we live in our home with the amount of stuff that feels good to us, perhaps sometimes a little bit more for those who right. need to declutter. And then we add on a Christmas tree that takes up, you know, a fourth of the living room and all these yeah. other things to the space. So it's just like adding a whole nother layer. And, you know, one of the tips I give people is for each decor piece you put out, then, you know, take one out and store it back in the time being for that, while that decoration is out, so that it's not just adding a whole nother layer on top of what you already have.
Because, so you're not cluttering up more. I like that. You're subtracting so you can add something temporarily.
Exactly. And so it just helps with our visual clutterness, which just helps with our mind and not feeling so distracted. And with regards to decorating, it's, you know, don't feel like you have to decorate just because you did it growing up, or your family does it, or even if you did it last year, you know, really be conscious of if it's something you want to do. And if you do, awesome, and you know, have fun with it by all means. But, you know, don't fall into the pressures of society that you have to have a Christmas tree this year or something, because it can be very stressful for folks, and, you know, adding travel on top of that.
And I'm sorry, you finish first, Tisha, and then I'll say.
No, I'm just, you know, being very mindful of number one, if you want to decorate. Number two, what you are decorating with. Do you like them, or are you just putting them out because they were given to you as a gift from someone, so you feel mm-hmm. like you should put the Santa Claus on the table or whatever the case is. And then thirdly, does it feel like it's too much? And then fourthly, you know, don't feel like you have to, now I'm getting into a little aesthetics, don't feel like it has to be red and green. Those are very, red and green are very, they're complementary colors. And so they are opposites. And so they generate a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And yeah, they can be a little startling.
Yeah.
And, you know, which, you know, being a yin time of year, you know, with, it is nice to have some yang energy, which is kind of like fire thrown in, which is why the twinkling lights, you know, that's actually why the Christmas lights are used. They go back to traditions with because it's so dark, and them mimicking like the stars in the sky to bring in more light. So,
right.
you know, a little fire is nice during this time of year.
But, to warm it up, to warm up a space visually and emotionally.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes.
So I'm really liking that you're giving us permission to decorate as we feel inclined to, because some holiday decorations are so ugly, and, you know, to just, you know, like, give yourself permission to not, you know, to use them or not, and to use something like you talk about in your work in the color palette of your home as it exists already. You know, it could be flowers or something in the tone and hue of your wall color or decorations that exist, that it doesn't have to be this loud, you know, obnoxious plastic stuff that
right.
you know, you might feel guilty about throwing away, so it accumulates over all the years, adding to clutter and damaging the feng shui of one's space.
Exactly.
So I like that part that you're, you know, like suggesting that people tune in to what's natural for them in decorating or not for the holidays. And it may be just simple, like a string of white lights, or I think fresh mm-hmm. flowers, which are usually nice, or like poinsettias, you know, a natural decoration, like something living.
Yes. Yes, yes.
So what is...
Yeah, and, you know, if you don't want a big Christmas tree, then, you know, just put a nice string of lights on an existing plant that you have.
Right.
So there's definitely ways to be festive without, you know, feeling like your whole house is being taken over by an elf.
Exactly. Exactly. What else is important for our listeners to know about, you know, these tips for the holidays and how to have one's home in harmony? Or even what I wondered today when I went on a jog is, what about when you go to someone else's home? Is there a way that you can, I don't know, bring in good feng shui or to someone else's home if you're going to a holiday party?
Well, yeah, I think that brings up just, you know, general self-care during this time of year. Okay. And, you know, it's such an easy time to indulge, whether it's food or, like, you know, social invites. And again, more of that busyness and, you know, just being mindful of your own energy levels. And if it's something you want to do versus should do, you know, our energy tends to be lower during this time, and it's for good reason. It's like we need to take, you know, tips from the animals, because it's a time of hibernation, mm-hmm. You know, time of going more inward and recharging the batteries, so that come spring. And by the way, this is actually really for those living in the, you know, Southern California, where we don't really have seasons as much with other seasonal areas, to really be, you have to be more conscious about doing that than places where they're, you know, snowed in for a week and they have no, are not yes. able to get out of the house.
Yeah.
So we have to be even more mindful to kind of take a step back. And, you know, it's a great, for, you know, for people, for their work, like, it's a great time for, you know, brainstorming and more of that idea phase.
Okay, yeah.
And then come spring, you know, actually taking action on stuff.
And you talk about,
anyway, go ahead.
You talk about too, like, how this is a time when animals are hibernating, where it's in cold climates. And so our natural inclination is to, you know, the sun's setting earlier. It's set yesterday in New Orleans around 4:30 p.m. And my clients are coming in, we're yawning, you know, feel like we need naps, and it's 4:30. So I hear you saying to go with that energy and mm-hmm. maybe even use it for meditation or journal writing or some more internal development type activities. Yeah. I think since we exactly. are typically more social.
Yes, exactly.
So do you have
and
any
guidelines other people
or suggestions?
Well, yeah, exactly what you're saying. You know, meditating, okay, cool. yoga, journaling, sleeping more. You know, all of these are what this time of the year call for. Now, I was going to say for folks who already have a lot of yin energy, we all of us have a dominant element and also tend to go towards yin or yang. And so for those who already have a high constitution of yin energy already, then, you know, where they might be prone to depression, things like that, then
yeah.
they will want to add more yang to their life, and which could be, you know, getting more cardio at the gym, like something that really, you know, gets the energy flowing. Adding more string lights into their home, you know, bringing more fire elements, candles and strings of lights to bring more energy in. So, you know, we all have our own specific energy and what we need to balance ourselves out with that. So that's also
such
something to keep in mind.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And in the show we did back in August, we spoke more about the yin and yang energy systems as they relate mm-hmm. to what propensity we have. So yeah, that's such a good reminder. I like that you said that.
Yes, it's hard to forget for you. I know you're a big fire person,
right?
And I tend toward yang myself. So for people like us, it is, we need to slow down, you know. And for those who are more water element like, then it's a time to, they will need to add some more energy for sure.
Such a good point. Mm-hmm. I know also you talk about, so I'm just envisioning, thinking of my home even, and for an annual holiday party that I have, and, you know, people tend to transform their homes to entertain, so you might lose some of that special personal space. So you talk about in your writing about creating a sacred space and the bedroom being a space that you keep as your own, that you don't add with clutter. Can you talk a little about that as we transform our homes to entertain, how we can also maintain personal private space that isn't just dominated by the holiday season?
Yeah, that's such a good point, because if a floor plan is designed well, there's a very distinct difference between the public spaces and the private spaces. The public spaces obviously being those of when people come over, they, you know, can linger through those areas, whereas, you know, the private spaces are the bedrooms and probably the master bath if there's multiple right. bathrooms. And so, yeah, if there's a lot of socializing going on, then it is that much more important to make those private spaces, mainly like the master bedroom, a sanctuary, so that you do have a place to go to really, you know, soak in that yin energy. And then, you know, for those who don't entertain a lot, then that their private space, or excuse me, their public spaces may not be so public.
Right.
Maybe the whole house is more private, but yeah, it is so important to have, regardless of what time of year it is actually, to have some area in your home that you consider a sacred space. So it's like a little meditation area, or maybe a favorite chair that you can read with a lamp and read a book in, or it could be your bathtub. But whatever it is, really, really make it a little sanctuary space. And you could even add a little altar with some items that have particular meaning to you. If it's a bathtub, you know, adding candles, just really indulging in that, because it's really representing you honoring yourself and your connection to yourself. That's what that little sanctuary space represents. And it's like the phrase, you know, if you build it, they'll come. When you build these spaces in, as soon as you slip into it, you immediately go into a calmer place because it holds that energy over time. For example, if it's a meditation little spot, it starts to create the energy of meditation. And so it will be so much easier to slip into your meditation if you have a designated spot for it.
Yeah. And I think smells and scents too can really can shift your energy really quickly. And I know you have your line of the essential oil smudge sprays. Is there one or two that you particularly like for the holidays during this time where there's a lot of yin energy to bring some balance?
Well, the purpose of the smudge spray is to clear the energy, and it happens to have a really great scent with it as well. But it is actually a great thing to have this time of year for if you do a lot of entertaining and have a lot of people over, or have family over, and then after the party ends or the people leave, it's always good to clear the energy. Not that people are negative necessarily, and something could have gone south. But even if it didn't, it's a lot of energy in a space that you don't really need to take on. We don't really need to take on other people's energies. We have enough to work with our own stuff, right?
Yeah, we do. And I know I like to, after entertaining or having someone visiting, just clear my space so I feel more grounded. You know, like you said, it's not that there's necessarily negativity that's been brought in, but it helps me to get grounded again and focused on being in my home and the things that I do here. And so I think it can be helpful to have something to clear your space after entertaining or family, friends visiting, et cetera.
Yeah. And speaking of, I've started to, when I come home, if I've been in a really high dense area, I will smudge myself upon coming back home, just because of realizing the sensitivity of energies. And so that it's almost like taking your shoes off when you come in, you know, it's like, it keeps your home nice and clear of the rest of the world.
Yes. So in addition to talking about the holidays as we are and the things that we can do during this specific time, you know, you are a feng shui master and you train both people and you work with individuals and businesses to bring harmony into their space. So it is a creative environment for them to live and work. So I wondered if we could talk some about that and your podcast that I listened to earlier on the Cosmic Trinity, which was so interesting for me. So is that okay, Tisha, if we kind of go there for a portion of the show?
Yes. Yeah, you want to talk about the Cosmic Trinity?
Yes. It thrust me into action, your Cosmic Trinity podcast that you have on your website. And y'all, for our listeners, earthhome.tv is Tisha's website, and it's really beautiful. And there's a specific podcast about the Cosmic Trinity. Yes. So can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So the reason why I love the Cosmic Trinity is because it really explains where feng shui, or where the power of feng shui, lies in the big picture. Because what in my work, I began to notice that people often fell into two categories: those who really didn't believe that feng shui works, or those who blamed everything on their home. And really the truth lies in the middle of those two places. And that's really what the Cosmic Trinity shows us. The Cosmic Trinity comes out of Chinese metaphysics. And it says that our luck or destiny is made up of three different lucks, each given a 33% piece of the pie. And the earth luck is the feng shui, which also includes, you know, where you live. Feng shui starts with your city, with your neighborhood, with the land you live on. It goes into the four walls from there. The earth luck is the feng shui. And then the heaven luck is things such as your astrology or in yoga we use the word samskara, which is kind of like your karmas that you've come in with, or soul contracts.
Past life karmas.
And so the heaven luck is kind of what we have the least amount of control over, so to speak.
Transits and such that happen for us.
Yeah. And that's 33%. And then the other 33% is our human luck. And that's our actions. That's the choices we make, our free will. And so that we have obviously a lot of control over. So a lot of times when a feng shui remedy takes hold, and what I mean by that is, you know, we declutter the wealth corner and suddenly the next day they go to work and get a raise. This happens actually quite a bit for people.
Yeah.
Like as soon as they make a change, it like literally like instantly something pretty amazing can happen. But it doesn't always happen. But it does. This actually happens a lot to my students who take my course. It's really funny because they're making changes to their houses. They're taking the course, and it's fun to hear the stories that come out of that. But anyway, what happens is, when those sudden things happen, it's because their human luck was in place. For example, we'll take an example of someone who did get a raise, a significant raise at work. You know, they were going to work every day, doing a good job. You know, that's the human luck, taking action, right action. And then let's say I'm presuming that there was a really nice astrological transit going through their chart around that time that had to do with, finances in some way. And then, so there's a 66% in place. And then they declutter the wealth corner. That's the last 33%. And that's when the feng shui magics really happen.
Where everything aligns, it sounds like. And manifestation happens.
That's right. Because otherwise, I mean, like most of our days are pretty ordinary. You know, we go to work, we come home. And then we've had days like this when it's like, oh my gosh, everything comes together and you meet the perfect person, or, you know, whatever the case is. So what's really cool about that is that there's other things at play besides the feng shui. And yet the feng shui has to be involved too for something to really take root that you've been wanting. So it's like it doesn't give feng shui as much power as it should, and yet it gives it as just as much as any and all of the others. So it's really cool to think about and to think about your own home and, you know, where is that 33% lying in your own home that you could, make some magic with?
Yeah. And when you were speaking about, for example, decluttering your wealth corner, that corresponds to the Bagua map that you would do with a client, correct? To overlay that in their living space to know what quadrant, what region that even is. So
that's right.
Yeah. Super cool.
Yeah. So I'm using that term very loosely. And so I know a lot of people probably are wondering where their wealth corner is at this point, or where their love corner is, or health, right? And that's so fun. It's like, there are these, what I think of as energy portals in our home that, you know, most people are not aware of unless you're familiar with feng shui. And they just kind of like the chakras in the body, you know, mm-hmm. they very well may be blocked. And you're not fully utilizing all of your energy. The same with the Bagua map in our home. We have, there's basically, you can just draw a big tic-tac-toe board over your floor plan. And each of those 9 squares represents a different area of your life. And right. you can see where the areas of your life fall within your home. And our home is basically just a blueprint of us and our own energy.
Yes.
And that Bagua map shows you where basically your psyche lies within your home. And for folks who aren't familiar with the Bagua map, you can get a free copy on when you go to my website, and a box will pop up to sign up for my newsletter. And when you do that, you'll get a free download with the Bagua map and showing you how to apply it over your floor plan.
And for our listeners to know that you work with clients both in person, going to their homes, and you also do that remotely, having them send in a floor plan, either, you know, drawn by them or, you know, in some kind of more formalized way, correct? So you can work mm-hmm. with clients yeah. remotely or in the Los Angeles area to feng shui their space.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
And if I remember and, correctly, you know, go on, and then mm-hmm. I'll ask you.
I was just saying, you know, feng shui is, you know, it's best applied before you start having problems.
Yeah.
In other words, you know, when you're looking for a home or when you're building a home or when you're doing a renovation, because the floor plan, wow, is so huge. I can pretty much look at a floor plan and tell what's going on in someone's life. And if you can know this ahead of time and know what to look for and before you know, sign on the dotted line, you'll be much better for it in the long run.
Yeah. And from our first show, from what I'm remembering, is that a lot of what you help your clients with can be done by beginning with decluttering, that's such a foundational and fundamental part of this process is to begin to declutter now. It's free. You just go and,
that's right.
and start, you know, doing that. And that in itself brings up the energy in your living space, correct?
Absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned that. I call it my 3-step process to feng shui your life. And the first step is the decluttering. And the second step is rearranging. And then the third step is you can add things. And so I came up with this 3-step process because what I was finding is that clients always wanted to jump to step 3, which is add stuff. And this is kind of what people equate feng shui with, is adding a bunch of stuff, crystals, plants.
Right.
Mirrors, you know, all this stuff. And yet that is so not what it's about. And in our culture that we're in, you know, can lead back to the beginning of the show of we clutter our lives and we clutter our homes. And so it is really this first step is removing, which is the decluttering, that which is no longer serving you, items that are no longer in your highest and best interest to keep. And really that's just wearing down on your energy field. It is blocking, stagnating, clouding, claustrophobing, that's a verb.
Yes.
Your life. And when you start to remove things, it frees up the energy, it allows flow, it allows right. new energy to come in, it allows ideas to come in. And it really is pretty miraculous. And like you said, if you don't do another thing in front, like, and it is completely free, a lot of times you can even make money because some people find money or find like these lost treasures or that they forgot about. It's really been fun to hear stories of people that find things that are actually of great value. So you can even make money decluttering.
You know, and it just feels so good to get rid of things you don't need. It opens up space visually, physically, and emotionally and spiritually. You feel it walking
That's right.
through your living space.
Yeah.
So I told you before we came live on the show earlier, I was listening to your Cosmic Trinity podcast, and I'm just kind of sitting here taking some notes. And when you got to the part about decluttering, say the whatever example you were using, it was literally like a fire lit under my ass. And I went running to my closet with a garbage bag, and I started taking clothes off, scare my cat out the closet. Cat goes running out because I was like, this is so important, you know. And it's always been remarkable to me in my own life when I've moved to a new home or apartment that might be larger than the residence I had before, and there's all this empty space with nothing in it, and how quickly I can fill it up, how quickly we can fill up the empty space with things. And even when I got my apartment in Los Angeles, my second residence, completely empty space, not a single thing in there. And now within a few months, it's full. It's not cluttered, you know, at all, but just how we tend to have this, what is this need that we have to fill our empty spaces? It's almost like compulsive.
Yeah. It is. Yeah, I actually read a blog article on this. It's on the Livebox magazine site. It's called The Fear of Empty Space and Why We Clutter Our Lives.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, you're spot on where we're connecting in our wavelengths. It really is a metaphor for our life. And it's the fear of having an empty calendar. It's the fear of having it's exactly what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, of the water phase and having to go within. You know, if we don't have all these external distractions, that means I have to hear my thoughts. And, oh my God, what rabbit hole is that going to take me down? And so we metaphorically or literally turn up the TV volume. We turn up the radio. We turn up the social. We turn up all these things that are so loud so that we don't have to hear what's going on inside. And yet that's really the key through which we will eventually find happiness instead of just cluttering and piling on or band-aiding our lives. Then that's actually what leads to overwhelmment. And I would say the predominant emotion in our collective consciousness, well, perhaps at least until last week, I think now it's just plain old fear, but it was overwhelmment. We are overwhelmed with so much stuff, data, information, everything. We are overwhelmed. And this is a product of years and decades of piling on things for quick fixes, as opposed to going through this death, birth, death, and rebirth phase and the letting go. The death is basically decluttering. Decluttering is death. It's a letting go. And people tend to skip over that. And to make it a little more practical, this water phase, this winter phase that we're moving into is such a great time to declutter for exactly these reasons. You can think of it as in terms of gardening, of, you know, when this time of the year is when all the leaves have fallen and you see the bareness of everything, which is ourselves and our thoughts and all that stuff. But, you know, it's a time of you sweep away the old leaves. And so you're left with just plain soil. And yet it's that dark, deep soil where we plant the seeds that will germinate come springtime. And that's what we tend to skip over. Instead, we just keep adding new stuff that's not really based in anything that we truly want.
And I think this metaphor you're speaking of right now of what we're planting in our soil, you know, is what will grow in the future. I was reading last night an article related to that. As far as the earth, you know, it will grow poison just as healthily as it will grow corn or any other crop. And it was like an aha moment that what we plant within ourselves, you know, be it something healthy or something unhealthy, either will grow and flourish. So we have to be really mindful, I think, about what we're planting in ourselves and what we're, you know, developing.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And that's making me think, you know, I read an article you blogged about recently that was super cool about related to we each have a predominant element and how that relates to our clothing. And so can you talk a little about that as well?
Yeah. I love, you know, I love putting energy in categories, and anytime I can do that, it's fun. And even just is something is fun and is our wardrobe. And it's, you know, everything we do or wear or buy or, you know, is a symbol of us in some way. If we really sit down and look at it, and our wardrobe is certainly an aspect of that. So the five elements, like I said, we each have a dominant element. For example, yours would be fire. I get to use you as my fire example.
Yeah, please.
You're two Aries.
Right, I know. It's troubling sometimes.
So whatever your dominant element is, we tend to dress accordingly to it. And there's nothing wrong or right about anything I'm about to say. It's just interesting to bring some consciousness to it, because a lot of times we can be overly balanced in whatever we are. So for example, you might tend to be too fiery sometimes. And, so a typical fire element person will dress in bold colors, a lot of like shapes and accessories. That being said, people also, some of them have a second dominant element of water, which actually is an internal balancing system for them to kind of like, fire hose the fire, internal fire. And so a lot of times fire people will actually wear a lot of black, which is the water element. And so water, yes. Black and dark tones will be very calming for a fire element person.
It's great you're saying that, because when I read through the different the elements and what kind of clothing might typically suit that element, I'm a creative also, you know, I'm a glass artist and sculptor, and you talked about a lot of creatives dress in the water element style, and I typically wear black and say like red shoes, you know, so just like a pop of color. Yeah. And as opposed to a typical fire person, I don't really have, you know, large accessories. I like simple, elegant accessories that are well made, you know. So I really related to that water element style of dressing. But I love people who dress in, say, the wood element style. Like, I find that very cool.
Yeah. So the wood element people are they're leaders. They have a lot of flexibility, because as a leader, you have to be flexible because you're inventing the wheel. And so there's going to be some twists and turns. And so you have to be flexible and very adaptable. And so this shows up in your wardrobe. So there'll be a lot of cottons, a lot of, you know, the type of people. I'm a wood element primarily, so this is easy.
Yeah, you seem definitely wood element.
My wardrobe, I can easily wear the same thing during the day and then go to a party at night and kind of fit in. It's a very adaptable wardrobe.
You're a Cancer. So you're a water sign, but you're Taurus rising, if I'm remembering correctly, and Sagittarius.
Capricorn rising.
Yeah, of course.
Capricorn rising, Taurus moon. Yeah, you're
okay.
So sometimes the five elements in Chinese medicine don't exactly translate to Western astrology, although there are some that very much is hard to get away with, Aries being one of them, Taurus and the earth sign usually go hand in hand. Virgos are almost always metal elements.
Okay.
So there is.
What about Geminis?
Gemini.
I'm a Gemini sign.
When are you gonna ever figure out a Gemini to know what to put them in?
And I'm a triple Gemini, so I can multitask like no one's business, except for maybe you might outdo me in the multitasking, because since we met, your websites, there's so much more on it, and you've done so many more things. I'm like, okay, I think you have me beat, but that's...
Wait, okay, so you're triple Gemini?
Sun in Gemini, Venus in Gemini, and I forget the third planet.
Okay, so
since
you're Aries,
okay. Aries.
Okay, well, that's a lot of mental energy. Yeah, so that would be hard to translate with an element. You'd have to take the formal quiz and see where you fall. But probably, you know, sometimes people do fall kind of across the board, kind of a jack of all trades. So you very well may fit into kind of a lot of them. For people who are familiar with Ayurvedic medicine, it's similar to the doshas, and there's some people that are considered tridoshic, and whether like even across all three of them, and sometimes people do that with the five elements, and you might be one of them.
Okay, cool. And for our listeners, everything we're talking about is in one of your books. You have four books out right now. So if y'all listening are interested in you know, doing the quiz for yourself, go to Tisha's website, earthhome.tv, and order one of her books and take the quiz and see where you fit with what element you are and everything that we're speaking about today.
Yeah, that's my book, Decorating with the Five Elements of Feng Shui. And, you know, the whole point of the book is just bringing more intention into your space and through decor. It's actually kind of the science behind decorating for people who doesn't necessarily come intuitive. It's actually a very, like, almost a scientific approach to decorating. But it's also
great.
Beyond that, really taking into consideration your own energy and what feels good to you or how you need to balance out your own energy. That's Decorating with the Five Elements of Feng Shui, and you can find that. You can link to it from my website, or you can find it on Amazon and most bookstores as well.
And do you want to talk about your classes that are coming up as well in 2017 for those that might be interested in learning about Feng Shui?
Yes, I have. I have Earth Home School of Feng Shui, where I train people to become certified Feng Shui professionals.
Yeah.
And it's about a 12-week course. I hold the online courses about four times a year. And then I do intermittent in-class opportunities, in-class learning, in which the next one's coming up at the beginning of March. It's going to be in L.A. at the Pacific Design Center. So I'm really excited about that.
Oh, wow.
So it's a long, like a four-day training. And just really super, super cool. When you start working with feng shui, I mean, you automatically start changing your life without trying
I'm
to.
Sure. Yeah, just naturally, all that one would learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a very transformative weekend. Or if you take the online course, it's over 12 weeks, so there's time to integrate all the work. So that has its advantages as well to taking that route. So the online one starts end of January, and then there's the choice of the in-person one in LA as well. And then
in March.
We'll see. Yeah, in March.
And then also for our listeners, you have on your website as well really cool clutter clearing 9-day detox, an online course that's really affordable, as well as Feng Shui with the Five Elements, an online course. So you offer a lot of different things at different price points and commitment levels, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, thanks. I try to be conscious of that because I want this work to be available to as many people as possible, and you know, kind of set everyone up to win. And so, yeah, the 9-day clutter course is only $9. I would give it away for free, except for you're more likely to go through with it if you pay for it.
Right.
So, if you want to start somewhere, you can sign up for my newsletter and start looking at the Boggle map with your space. And by the way, I also have a webinar series that's going to be starting up in January. It's not on my website yet, but if you sign up from my newsletter, then you'll get the information for that coming up down the road. And that webinar series is going to be free. And I'm going to be talking about some really cool stuff from, you know, relationships to using your home as a manifesting tool, to talking about problem homes. So definitely sign up for my newsletter to get the information for that.
Okay, cool. You know, and lastly, I wanted to ask you, because I don't think we got to it when you were on the show in August, but your organization, Feng Shui for the Planet, can you talk some about that? It's a way that you give back.
Yeah, so this is, you know, another part of my vision of making this work accessible to everyone. And so, you know, I'm looking to partner with organizations that are already kind of on the ground doing the work of basically just creating better living spaces for the planet. And so whether that's with donating, you know, linens to helping paint schools. So there's already tons of organizations doing this work, and Feng Shui for the Planet is looking to partner with those organizations and bringing more awareness to those projects. So definitely more down the road coming with that for sure.
When did you start this? How long ago, Tisha?
It's about 2 years ago. It's still under, not under construction, but it's getting its wheels moving.
Very cool. Very cool. And just a last thought just popped in my head. I enjoy sometimes just checking out what you're writing on Livebox magazine and online publication. For instance, you had something in the last couple months, just really specific things, which I find helpful. I love practical tips. For example, mm-hmm. if you have a dresser, a lot of dressers are sold with a mirror sticking on top of it. Mm. And you were saying that's one of the worst things. And fortunately, I don't have any of that in either residence. So far, everything you put out there, I'm like all in alignment. Everything's good. So, so I really like when you give these practical tips to people.
Yes, yes. Good. Yeah. Yeah. The mirrors. Yeah. There's some things that like should be outlawed. there's another one that I should have put on there. It says mirrored closet doors that were really popular like in the 90s. Yes. And because they're usually across from the bed and you never want a mirror across from the bed. Okay. So if you don't do anything else in feng shui, do not put a mirror across from the bed.
Okay. That's a great reminder. Well, Tisha, I really
just trust me.
I believe you. So I think you heard show that we can talk about and maybe come up with another aspect of feng shui as it relates to helping people declutter and live more harmonious lives.
Yeah, you wait till in the spring we can do a little purging episode and really get the nuances of why people hold on to the things they hold on to and the creative excuses we come up with of why we hold on to things can be really fun to work with.
Oh, let's do that then. And for our listeners, again, you can find Tisha on earthhome.tv. Thank you so much for coming back on.
Thank you, Lisa.
You're welcome. Bye.
All right, bye.
That concludes our show for today. Next Thursday is Thanksgiving, so we will be taking a break and playing an episode of the past, but I'll be back live with another guest in 2 weeks. Thank you for listening, and I will be back in 2 weeks.
You're listening to All Things Therapy with Lisa Tahir.